Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, hello. I'm Celeste. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you to the Labridge this evening and hope that that little classic reggae has put you in that relaxed mood and you have forgotten about the cares of the week, the day, or the moment, because it's time to chill, and as we say on the island, no problem, man. So let's take our virtual trip. We'll pretend that we are there, and the balmy breezes of the trade winds are blowing across your face, and you're relaxed in some place that you're familiar with. Could be on the deck, on the beach, in the woods, on the veranda, or in the old days we were on the rooftop of those flat roof houses. They were hot like hell during the days. We didn't have AC like they do now, but in the evenings, man, we were on the roof with that breeze. So I hope you're there with me, and whatever your favorite drink was, today mine is just coconut water. But I found one in the store, and it really tastes like the real thing. And I hope you can slip a little something stronger in yours for medical reasons. I'll just have to chill with the coconut water. So, on a more serious side, I want to thank you for being here. This is Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week on a Thursday where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And just for the listeners who might be new to the show, I'll just have them know that I am an American because I've been here for a long time, very long time. But deep in my heart, I am still a Jamaican. And I left Jamaica before independence. I left in 1959. So I am not too familiar with the new Jamaica. Now and then I go online and check a few things. But what we discuss here on the Backyard Labrish is things and during my time of growing up, because I am really now talking a lot about things that happened 100 years ago And realizing that if it was not for some wonderful, passionate historians, who one in particular did the research for her thesis, Dr. Rebecca Tortello, and her findings on about the culture and things of the past is on Pieces of the Past, which is published by the Gleaner. And there's also a book you can buy. And also, I was given the gift of a book, which is the done by Olive Senior, and it's a wonderful book to give as a gift. And I'm not promoting these because I don't even sell them on the website, but I think you can get any of those on Amazon. But tonight I am featuring one of my very favorite historians because I just like the way she does her research. And I have to start out by correcting an error that I did in the promo because some of the regulars would know that I have been discussing, I think it was People of the Past, 100 years ago and so on. And I spoke a couple weeks ago about a Mr. Joseph who could trace his ancestors from Africa, was very familiar with where his father came from and who his father was, and went on to be educated, went to London, and published a book of poetry. I am curious to know if that is still in print. I've just suddenly developed this passion about the past, and as I mentioned before, I confess that when I was in school, I was not interested in history. I couldn't see the relevance at the time, how it was going to help me, you know, with whatever I was going to become. So I didn't have that love for it that I do now. But the part that I really, really love is bringing to life some of these people that Dr. Joy Lumsden has written about. And she presented an article at a conference. And incidentally, I say many times that her material is just all over the web. She has several websites. And I'm always looking for new material from her. And I stumbled on this that was published on the, I think, Google Pages. So if you want to really see the articles I do in detail, just Google Dr. Lumsden's name and you will get to the articles. Okay, so where I went wrong is I mentioned in my promo, if you're on my list, that the Mr. Hector Joseph, who we're going to be discussing tonight, was the son of the Joseph I spoke to of before, who went on to write his own book. And although the last name is the same, and at different periods of when things were published about them, the Joseph had an S, and sometimes it didn't. So both of them had that problem, issue, where both of them were Joseph, but she does not think there's no linkage between the two men that I wrote about. So if you would please remember, as I discuss this Joseph, who was a barrister, that he's different from the son of the other one, who was also in law too. So what I'm going to be doing this evening, while I do my little sidebars, you know, I always tell the fans that this is all of this conversation, although we're really talking sometimes about some very important people who had very important positions and contributed in a very important way, I tend to sort of lighten up on it and, you know, come up with my own thoughts about what might have been going on then. And it brings me to the point I always try to make with the seniors, that we're all writing our own stories as we live our lives. And we should be doing it using the technology we have today, because these people did not. They had to wait till someone wrote about them in the newspaper, and this is what, or, you know, a church directory or a school, it's information. So this is what Dr. Lumsden is using to piece these people's lives together. So you don't want that to happen to you. So I'm just planting that little seed. So she sent me a note when she received the promo, and I want to read from what she sent me. Matthew Henry Spencer Joseph, the son of the black schoolmaster Matthew Joseph, was born in Trinityville, St. Thomas, in the East, on November 28th in 1861. Now, Matthew Joseph, who gave his son his early education, had apparently intended him to be a lawyer from an early stage. But this plan was aborted because of financial losses from the publication of his book of poems in 1876. So, instead of being articled to a well-known Kingston lawyer, Matthew Henry attended the Michael College, where he placed first throughout his course, and then followed his father in the teaching profession in 1880. He taught for some time at the Vere Free Schools, but resigned to become articled to a land surveyor. After receiving his commission from the governor in 1890, Joseph was apparently the first black barrister in Jamaica. No, wait a minute. There he received his commission from the governor in 1890. He practiced, as a commissioned surveyor for several years, apparently the first black Jamaican to do so. But now the person I'm going to talk about now is Hector Archibald Joseph, was apparently the first black barrister in Jamaica. He was born in 1871 and grew up in the Ligonie area. His father had a shop in Matilda's Corner and owned land in Barbican, on which he grew pineapples. The two men were not related as far as I have been able to discover. It is easy to confuse them, but these were two different men. So please forgive me for confusing them, because, you know, I'm going to pull the senior card now, because I was so really thrilled in reading all these details that somehow the names got mixed up. And I mentioned in the promo that the one we're talking about tonight, Hector, was the son of Matthew when he wasn't. So, and I also want to mention that as I go through these names, I always like to call the name and spell the name, because I am sure that they're possibly descendants. I mean, some of you fans on the board may know somebody with these names, and it would be interesting to have their them trace their ancestors, because, you know, Jamaica was not, it's a big place to us, but it wasn't all that big, and there's a possibility they may be related to either of these gentlemen, because, you know, in the old days, how the men used to sort of sow their seeds. So anyway, we won't go there. Remember, I don't discuss religion, politics, or sex. So we're going to keep it clean tonight, Margaret. And let me just check to make sure it's just coconut water I have in this drink. Yeah, it looks okay. So let me just inform the fans online, and I see that there are a few, that whenever you want to join the Labridge, just hit 1 on your keypad, your telephone, and I'll see your hands raised, just like you were in school. And I'll be more than happy to have you join me in the Labridge. So feel free. And for those of you listening online, remember there's a number that should be coming up right on your screen where you call in if you want to join the Labrish. And it's 718-766-4558. So without any further ado, I am going to read you, and I just love the way the old writers, if they were writing about someone, describe them, and the verbs and adjectives that they use just really intrigued me. So I'm reading now from the paper that Dr. Lumsden submitted at a conference in 1995. It was held in Georgetown, Guyana. This paper has its ultimate origins in the problems I encountered in my research on Dr. Robert Love, an important black politician in Jamaica in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. At that period, it was almost impossible to know from the public records what was the skin color of men and women who appeared in the public sphere. Color was very seldom mentioned, except sometimes in the case of lower class individuals. Surnames are of little assistance since they're almost all of British origin, and even those which appear to indicate Jewish ancestry can also be totally misleading. Robert Love is, in fact, one of the best sources of information on skin color, as he had no inhibitions in most cases in stating the racial background of those he wrote about in the press, not always in the most tasteful terms. He was at pains to identify black and colored men as part of his campaign to install race pride in those of African ancestry. From his writings, I have been able to establish the identity of numbers of black men and women who otherwise could appear to be white or colored. This problem of identifying black participants in public life has, I believe, led to a continuing underestimation of the role of the black middle class and black intellectuals in Jamaica in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, since comparatively few of them have in fact been identified. Hector A. Joseph is one of the most prominent of these invisible black men. Though there are those older members of the legal profession who remembers him and in consequence knows he was black. Both the Jamaican historical records and public perception are almost totally ignorant of his existence. So I read that to tell you why I think giving a voice to some of this material is so important, because possibly only people who are researching history, doing some sort of documentation, would perhaps stumble on Dr. Lumsden's work about these people. But I think it is, this is my sidebar, and ladies and gentlemen, I think it is important for us, you know, with a Jamaican heritage, to know. I find this, all this information rather inspiring, and I'm hoping that me giving a voice to this and, you know, giving my sidebar, welcoming some of the callers with their comments will, you know, make it more visible to people that they were black and colored as well as white, sometimes working together in the same field from way back when. So I remember when I grew up, there was, I did not realize or was conscious of
any barriers for me as a black person that I couldn't do this or couldn't do that. It just, that thought never, ever entered my mind. Because, you know, my mother and my grandmother's period of time, they were accustomed to seeing people of different colors do whatever they wanted to do. I think the key that I got from just being around them, that, you know, there was all this class prejudice, but that the real key to everything was education. You know, if a person was educated, then they didn't have to be rich. They sort of earned a lot more respect because they could articulate and they could communicate and they could more or less, you know, get what they want. So, and many of the stories that I've brought to light, not necessarily of historical figures as big as this man or with using Dr. Lumsden's material, but there were people of different colors doing wonderful things 100 years ago in Jamaica. I don't know if the same thing happened in the rest of the West Indies because, you know, I must confess also that I'm very ignorant about the history of, say, Trinidad and, you know, the other colonial islands. But now I'm having so much fun just getting enlightened with the Jamaican history that I don't think that I'll ever get to researching anywhere else. So if you will just bear with me now, I will go on with her article. And remember, you can always hit one on your telephone because every now and then I need to take a break. Anyhow, so let me get back to Dr. Lumsden papers here. When I started to notice the name of Hector Josephs, and this time it's spelled with an S, in the 1890s, in the sources I was using, chiefly newspapers, I assumed that he was a white or colored barrister, possibly of a Jewish ancestry. It seems too early for a Lebanese to be of this status. She's referring to when they came, you know, because we all know the Jews came there even before the British. This is back to her article. Anyway, I assumed I knew who was the first black barrister in Jamaica, as would most other people in Jamaica. I didn't know. He would have been J.A.G. Smith, Sr., who was a prominent political figure in the 1920s and 30s. It was only when I saw Joseph's photograph in the 1916 edition of Who's Who in Jamaica that I discovered that he was a black or very dark-skinned colored man. Suddenly, the picture of the public sphere at the turn of the century looked remarkably different from my earlier perceptions. Around 1900, Joseph was one of the five or six barristers prominent in the Kingston courts. Not long afterwards, I discovered from a line illustration in the Daily Gleaner that another of these Kingston barristers, H.M. Spencer Joseph, was also a black man. No, he's the one who's son of the other man. One may question why it is that these men, along with black solicitors, medical doctors and dentists, and a few businessmen, have been overlooked and apparently forgotten in the history of Jamaica at this period. The teachers and clergy have been remembered to some extent, but these men have virtually vanished from the record. So, guess what? We are here tonight to put a change to that. So, back to the article. Although I have some idea as to the reasons for this neglect. I have very little to base it on. I am therefore more concerned for the moment to try to restore men such as Hector Joseph to a place in the record in order to begin to introduce a greater balance to a historical schema which had tended to downplay the role of the black people of Jamaica in the island's development between 1865 and 1914. Sidebar, we're talking way back when, 1865. I am sure that my grandchildren, when they, 50 years from now, and they're reading or talking about their grandmother, and it says she was born in 1935, they're going to say, oh, my God. So as I'm saying, OMG, 1865 seems so long ago, although my mother was born in 1912. So we're talking about a period of 1865 to 1940. One area of interest in respect to the black middle class at this time is how it came into existence. It seems likely that most black middle class families achieved upward mobility through the acquisition of land or of education, or possibly both. It would appear that Hector Joseph's family had acquired land. His father, Hector Joseph Sr., owned about 27 acres of land in the area just to the north of Matilda's Corner in St. Andrew, where he grew pineapples, among other crops. He also had a small shop at Matilda's Corner. There is, however, no indication of his educational background. His son benefited from what was a good Jamaican education for the period. I do not yet know where he received his primary education, but his secondary schooling was at the Collegiate School and at York Castle. Now, from the fans that have been with me from long ago, in the archives, we did a story on the Collegiate School, and there is no history about it. Dr. Lumsden is the one who pasted and put together the existence of the school by documentation from the newspaper of long ago. So we know it did exist. It sent several people to Howard at the time. It's just marvelous. So I would encourage the fans, when you have time, just check that show out. And it would, in the promo someplace I mentioned about the Collegiate, and it's spelled Collegiate, School of in Kingston. All right, back to the article. The former was the most important boys' secondary school in Kingston for much of the 19th century, although today it is all but forgotten since it closed in the early 20th century. A high proportion of the prominent Jamaicans of that time attended the school, and black boys seem to have attended the school without any problems. York Castle, established by the highly respected colored Methodist cleric, Dr. William Clark Murray, spelled M-U-R-R-A-Y, had a good reputation for scholastic achievement. The result of Joseph's excellent education was his winning the Jamaican scholarship in 1891. Although he hoped to go to Oxford, he ended up at Trinity Hall, Cambridge, a traditional college for the study of law. Remarkably, a section of diary kept by Hector Joseph while at Cambridge from February to July of 1893 has survived in manuscript form, and this document gives a enlightening view of the life of a West Indian student in England in the late 19th century. Isn't that interesting, guys? I am just fascinated that this man was keeping a diary and it still exists in manuscript form. Wow, I am just getting the chills. He appeared to have fitted into college and university life with ease. Like many students, he had problems with money, health, doing enough studying, and meeting members of the opposite sex. He seems to have coped as well as most students with these problems, probably better than many. He made friends with fellow West Indians, English students, and some Indians. He went on holidays with one of his English friends and was very popular with the sister and female cousins of his friends. If it seemed unlikely that a black West Indian could have fitted in so easily at Cambridge in the 1890s, a comment by a Jamaican, apparently white, in a letter from London printed in the Daily Gleaner in 1901 may clarify the situation. And this is what the man wrote. "But Cambridge is the place to see faces of the darker hues. Cambridge is emphatically the university for colored men, and it prides itself on the fact, for its traditions have always been as liberal as they have been honorable." The same writer commented on the increased numbers of black and colored people he saw in London, compared with his experience on a visit 4 or 5 years earlier. Now, from Joseph's diary entries written in London in July 1893, when he was eating dinner at Lincoln's Inn, it is clear that there was a well-established Jamaican community in London, which provided hospitality to the Jamaican students. Further research, I hope, will show the extent and makeup of this Jamaican group in London and reveal its importance in the international linkage of Jamaicans at this period, including, in particular, the black middle class. Now, Joseph's diary provides names which make an excellent starting point for this work. Hector Joseph's academic achievements at Cambridge were not outstanding. His starting point for this work, Hector Joseph's, was not outstanding. His entry in the Who's Who in Jamaica for 1916 records that he was first prize man in law at Trinity Hall in 1892, which may explain why he had high hopes for a first in Part 1 of the law in 1893. However, he did not do as well as he had hoped in his TRIPUS exam, but nor did anyone else in his year. No one, in fact, received a first. Joseph could perhaps in part blame his poor results on problems he had been having with one of his eyes, which had obliged the college to provide him with a reader in the weeks before the exams. And I'm taking a little sidebar here. I found that very interesting. Now, here is this very black man in college in London, and he's having trouble with his eye, and the college provides him with a reader. Well, I am impressed how people were so passionate about education. Okay, let's go back to the article. His hopes for an academic career were dashed. The third he received in law two, law in 1894, confirmed that he would not have such a career. He went on with his studies at Lincoln's Inn and was called to the bar on April 29th, 1896. So even though he didn't finish like he thought he would, he still carried on. Wow. He also appeared to have obtained an LLB from London University in the same year. In spite of many happy memories of England and Cambridge in particular, he must have returned home to Jamaica somewhat less than satisfied with what he had achieved. It does not seem, though, that he was the first black Jamaican to return to the island as a fully qualified barrister. He was called to the Jamaican bar on November 25th, 1896. That's the same year he came home. Being represented by J.F. Cargill and welcomed by the Chief Justice, His Honor Sir Fielding Clark, spelt with an E at the end. In the following years, he began to feature in many of the major law cases in Jamaica, both civil and criminal. In the late 1899, he was joined by another black barrister, H.M. Spencer Josephs, apparently no relation, who practiced in Kingston until 1903. See, that's where I got mixed up when and think that this other Joseph was this Joseph was the son of the other Joseph, but that is the one that was the son of the other Joseph. Okay, so Spencer Joseph was not to achieve the heights that his namesake would, but he is an interesting member of the black middle class at that period nonetheless. He was the son of a black schoolmaster, Matthew Joseph, who had outlined his ancestry in an autobiography prefaced to a book of verses, The Wonders of Creation, which he had published at his own expense in London in 1876. In this preface, Matthew Joseph stated that his parental grandfather was a prince and general of an Igbo tribe, who was captured and brought to Jamaica as a slave around 1870. And we did a show on that, so I'm not going to go into the details of that. I am going to pick up now on Mr. Hector Davis. Hector, you know who I'm talking about. So I'm going to take a break now and find out if there's anyone on the board that ever heard any of this wonderful history. Because I am so fascinated, and I'm so grateful to Dr. Lumsden, because she's such a great researcher that what she's researching one thing, she gets some information, she says, no, I got to check on this, and sometimes before she completes a whole dissertation on the person she's working on, she's off researching that other person. So she's always, her work is a work in progress, is my point. And she's always asking for feedback and if anyone has any other authentic information on the subject. So as I call these names out, I want to ask, do a shout out to anybody who may have that name or know someone who have that name, who may have the interest in finding out or may have some information, perhaps from a book, an article, something your ancestor left you, that could be relevant to finding out more about these important people. So I'm taking a break now, and I see a hand up, 631-451, and I'm going to open up the mic. I think I know who it is, But I'll do my little thing. You got Margaret in the backyard with her coconut water. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hi, Janine. What are you drinking this evening?
Right now, I'm really not drinking anything. But I would
are
like to
share that. Are you in the backyard?
Yeah.
Are you under the tree?
No.
Or on the deck?
I'm in my bed.
Ooh, okay. Well, we got to move it where you can feel the trade wind.
I know. Well, I'm thinking about that.
Well, welcome to the backyard.
Yes, I guess if my mind was to go further, it would be a rum and coconut water.
All right. Me too.
Yeah. Today I'm not feeling so good, so I'm taking it easy.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So what do you have to share with us this evening?
Well, I'm telling you, I'm listening, and I can't believe this, because at no time growing up, I heard of these people, you know, and to see they were in Kingston, some of them from
I'm telling you.
And I grew up in Kingston, and at no time the name was mentioned.
I'm telling you,
so,
my dear.
You know, it's really something to sit back now and hear about people, you know.
Right. And I feel so privileged because, you know, I don't even remember how I stumbled on all this. I knew what my passion was to, you know, talk about the past and how I grew up and share some of the stories from my grand aunts and the older people that I grew up around.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, especially for my grandchildren who are pure Americans, because their parents are Americans. They were born here.
Right.
So I wanted to sort of leave this legacy of the past that I knew. Because a lot is being written. I mean, the Jamaicans now are very techie, and all the information about what's going on now is online.
Right.
And, of course, we didn't have this technology even when I was growing up or 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Excuse me. So I'm embracing it and encouraging my peers to do the same, you know, just embrace the technology. It can be great.
Right.
So in doing so, you know, I stumble on this, and the more I get into it is the more I just develop more of a love for it, because I find these stories fascinating, just fascinating. And as I bring a story to life, I also find out for myself how much has changed and how much has remained the same.
Right.
You know, in several instances. And I just really feel so privileged to be at a state in my life that I can do this, you know, and it's really revitalizing me.
Right, right. Because
so
to
I'm
be
really
honest,
enjoying
if
it.
You didn't, it's to be honest, if you didn't bring all this to light, I don't think many of us would go searching for it. You know,
no, right.
I mean?
Who has time?
Yeah. You know.
You know, if you're doing a class on history, you perhaps would be researching it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But normally with the everyday coping just with life and its challenges, you don't have time. So I really consider myself quite privileged to be able to do it and have access to all of this wonderful material. And I'm able to read a lot better tonight for some reason. This was done in a format. I think she presented this as a paper or a lecture in Guyana. Is that where I said? You know, so it was sort of in a different, typed in a different format, and it was not as difficult to print.
Right.
And what I'm reading is mostly what she wrote.
Yes.
So in the other cases, sometimes I was reading from a print that she found someplace, you know, or information that she copied and placed on our website about what she's trying to piece together. And each time I do that, I'm trying to let the callers know on the board and those who might come by later how important it is for us we to write our own history.
Exactly.
Know that we have the tools, that we can make it in the clouds forever.
Yeah.
You know, that it will be there in cyberspace. We
right.
need to get with the program and don't be scared with it. Even if you do a video or write something and have someone, you know, put it in the archived email, it's there. You know, in Yahoo or whoever, it's there.
Yes.
Somebody can access it.
Right, right.
At some time. Now we have access to videos where people can see us and hear us and feel us. And we need to really be embracing all of this cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get back. I think I'm going to have to split this in two different sessions because there's so much information on this man and the other one who went on to be an attorney too.
Right.
But I just wanted to read from Dr. Lumsden's papers and then, you know, perhaps go on to some other things. I was thinking of ending this 100 years ago people, but they get more and more interesting as we discover new ones.
Right.
So you ready for some more old-time news?
Yes.
Okay. So let me see if I can catch up. So we now know that the gentleman who became that wonderful schoolmaster, remember I did a whole show on him.
Yes.
He had a son who then became a surveyor and all of that, and then he was called to the bar also. But he was not as prominent as Hector was.
Okay.
Okay, so the teacher, I'm just trying to separate where I have the teacher separate, the information on him separate from Hector. Okay, he had apparently intended one of his sons to be a lawyer from an early stage. We're talking about Matthew, but his plan was aborted because of his financial losses. Yes, well, I think I read that already. It is likely that Spencer Joseph had also been in contact with Jamaicans living in England,
mm-hmm.
as had Hector Joseph a few years earlier. Matthew Joseph had been able to call on services of Robert Gordon, a black Anglican priest in the London diocese, to write the preface to his book in 1876. Again, in this instance too, it would be of interest to know more about the contact these Jamaicans had in England. While H.M. Spencer Joseph disappeared from the legal scene in Jamaica around 1903, Hector Joseph went from strength to strength in his legal career. I just want to take the time now to talk about that. You know, you can have two people who are even out of the same seed. We know of siblings that will advance or get to such a pinnacle, and the other one or the other person just fade away. That has happened or has been happening for generations because we know it's still happening now.
Right.
You can even have two people with the same degrees,
yes.
the same level of learning, and they just, one will just go off with passion and plow their way through some obstacles and get the job done, and the other one will just sort of give up or, you know.
Yes.
So I find all these stories interesting because that is still happening. Okay, Jamaican Law Report. In 1907, he acted as Assistant Attorney General. We're talking about Hector now. And filled this position on many occasions up to 1912.
Wow.
That's when my mother was born.
Yeah.
And when appointed Assistant General, and and then appointed Assistant General. From 1914 to 1916, and again in 1919, he acted as Attorney General in this official capacity. He had a seat on the Legislative Council and the Privy Council.
Hmm.
He had gone as far as he apparently could in the government's legal service in Jamaica. In his legal career, he undoubtedly had the support of others in the legal profession. He and his family seemed to have some special link with the Cargill family, a white legal dynasty in Jamaica.
What's the name called? Cargill.
C-A-R-G-I-L-L.
Never heard of them.
I think I heard of that law firm. I think I really did. They were in Kingston. Okay. He was presented when he was called to the bar by J.F. Cargill, and according to an oral information, his office was in the same building as the Cargills on the corner of Duke Street and Water Lane. Here, at another location after the 1907 earthquake, young men like Marcus Garvey and older men like John Soulette, S-O-U-L-E-T-T-E, would meet for discussions of events of current interest. The Cargills apparently were the Josephs family solicitors. Hector Joseph was one of the Jamaican lawyers involved on the side of the insurance companies after the 1907 earthquake. Now, I remember doing the story on the earthquake,
right,
and the story talked about the black barrister who was arguing on the side of the insurance company about the claim that the business owners were making about their property, you know, whether it was destroyed in the earthquake or
yeah.
the fire. So
yeah.
this is the man they were talking about. It just went briefly about him. Wow. At some time in his career, he worked on a case in Jamaica alongside the prominent English lawyer, Sir Travis Humphreys. In 1911, he took silk, whatever that means, I don't know.
Took silk.
Almost certainly the first black Jamaican to do so. It must be something to do with a law degree or something.
Oh.
Interestingly, the then Attorney General, Sir John Branch, was made a KC, which is King's Counsel, on March 22nd. And one day later, the royal appointment of Josephs and H.I.C. Brown as King's Counsel in Jamaica was announced. The first KC in Jamaica had been T.B. Orton, the previous Attorney General. It is impressive that Joseph should have been given this status virtually simultaneously with the Attorney General and with Brown. I suppose those are the people who were white,
yeah.
who at this time was assistant to the Attorney General. Joseph had already acted as assistant to the Attorney General on several occasions and clearly had achieved considerable status in the legal community. Apart from his legal activities, which are impressive in themselves, Hector Josephs began to take a fairly high-profile role in other areas of Jamaican life. Here, again, it would appear that his links with the Cargills had some significance. In June 1900, he was mentioned as having severely strained his back while playing polo.
Wow.
And his entries in the Who's Who in Jamaica into the 1920s indicate that he was a member of the Ligony, Mandeville, and Royal Jamaica Yacht Clubs.
Mm.
He had, in fact, been on the managing committee of the latter as early as 1904. There were members of the Cargill family on the committee of some of these clubs. Now, remember now, we're talking about a very black man
mm-hmm.
who is doing all of those things with, you know, that during those days, there were more white
mm-hmm.
people in governments and belonging to these clubs and all of that
right.
than there were black people because they, people didn't have the money or the education.
Right.
So, obviously, there was no prejudice that they could not join. You know, it's saying that here.
Well, it's
Mandeville
on the proof.
And Royal Jamaica Jacob, he had in fact been on the, oh, I did that already. Although George Stabell, the black millionaire landowner, had been one of the founding members of the St. Andrews Club, it cannot have been entirely routine for black men, however wealthy or distinguished, to be members of such social club at this time. Certainly in the 1950s and later, the Legony and Royal Jamaican Yacht Club were considerably white exclusiveness. As a graduate of Cambridge, Joseph was welcome at King's House when the governor hosted a gathering of Oxford and Cambridge graduates in April of 1906. In April of 1910, he married Miss Clothide, Clothilde, Cobos, Cobos, I suppose is how I would pronounce it. I've never heard that name in Jamaica, Cobos. Oh, she's Spanish, a young lady of Spanish descent, a niece of Mrs. P.E. Aubrey, A-U-V-R-E-Y, at the Roman Catholic Church. It appeared that he moved with relative ease in Jamaican society, certainly in the pre-war period, as Joseph's was clearly interested in working for the colonial authorities in legal post, it is hardly surprising that he showed virtually no interest in getting involved with overt political organizations. In the late 1890s, early in his career, he did become involved with the newly reconstituted Jamaican Association, which was being reviewed in order to protest the action of John Chamberlain, Secretary of State for the Colonies, in filling up the nominated seats in the Legislative Council in order to defeat the elected members. He also accepted the position of president of the Kingston's Citizens Association, which had some political connotations, in 1910. Otherwise, his activities seem to have been of predominantly public service character. He was on the Earthquake Relief Committee in 1907, and
yes.
he worked on behalf of the YMCA and the Boy Scouts.
Oh.
He was a member of the Schools Commission, and during the war, he served as an officer in the Jamaica Reserve Regiment.
Mm.
He was also involved with the Jamaica Amateur Athletic Association and the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in Jamaica. Possibly the most significant aspect of his participation in Jamaican society was his involvement with the Freemasons. In 1914, he was installed as master of the Kingston Lodge in a ceremony described as one of the most brilliant functions ever held in Kingston. Among the many Masons present was Lord Corell from England, Sir John Pringle, District Grand Master of the English Constitution of CM, Olive Gate, Deputy Grand Master of Scottish Freemason. At some point in his Masonic career, before 1916, he was Deputy Grand Master. He was District Grand Registrar, of the District Grand Lodge in England, of England in Jamaica. Like the large majority of successful black men that many research has indicated in the pre-1920s period in Jamaica, Hector Joseph was an enthusiastic Mason. It is very hard not to believe that there was an important connection between their Freemasonship and their success. It is strange that currently it seems to be believed that it is only comparatively recent that black men have entered the ranks of Freemasons, which is so true. I don't know what all of this is going on in Jamaica now about, you know, all of this race difference, because black men and women have been doing things and involved in things from so long ago. But I suppose because the history was not available, and why some of the now Jamaicans are proclaiming that this was not so. That was all my sidebar, folks. So bear with me here. Back to Dr. Lumsden's article. Was there, in fact, some period in the 1920s and 30s onwards when black men were erased, were ease cut of masonry, E-A-S-E-D, cut of masonry, as they apparently were from the elite clubs in Jamaica? The question raised here need much further research in order to establish whether, in fact, there was a period of relative social advancement of black Jamaicans, which was, for reasons so far unclear, thrown into reverse in the post-war period by a spontaneous or possibly a deliberate white backlash. I have so far been unable to establish clearly the reason why Hector Joseph did not progress any further than acting Attorney General in Jamaica, though he was later to serve briefly as an acting judge. The reason may have been one of timing. In fact, the appointment may not have been available before Joseph hoped for further advancement. It is, however, quite possible that there was reluctance on the part of the Colonial Office to advance him in the face of possible local opposition, especially in the legal profession. It is certainly an era in which I wish to pursue further inquiries. It is of some interest to look at least briefly at the attitudes of the Colonial Office to the advancement of black and colored men in the period after the First World War. From the evidence of letters included in the governor's dispatches in the years immediately following the First World War, Colonial Office officials seem to have found themselves embarrassed to know how to deal with the numbers of applications from Jamaicans for posts in the colonial service, especially in Africa. Many of these applicants were reasonably well qualified. What color they were was always unknown. They sent anxious letters back to Jamaica inquiring whether the applicant was of when an otherwise acceptable candidate turned up, of not pure European descent. Usually he was not, although he might only be slightly colored. Listen to that one, slightly colored.
Mm-hmm.
On one occasion, let me go back here because I am getting my lines mixed up. On one occasion, when an otherwise acceptable candidate turned up in person at the colonial office, an official was amazed to find that he was black. Mm. Personal visits such as this, or the government's response to a query about race, were usually the deciding factor in sealing the applicant's fate. Although most of the applicants wanted jobs in West Africa or in the former German colonies in East Africa, one or two wanted jobs or promotions in the West Indies. Now, let me ask anybody on the board, did you know there was a German colony in East Africa? I must be not very smart, but that is the first time I'm even reading about a German colony in East Africa. I have to go Google that, or if somebody on the board could Google that and tell me what that's all about. Oh, I love Mr. Google. He can just educate me in a nanosecond. So let me get back. As far as the African colonies were concerned, even a slightly colored man could only expect to be offered a low-level job. Although it was stated, we do not bar colored men. However, this remark was in relation to a customs post. For post in the West Indies, the response was not so clear. There were still inquiries about race, but little indication whether it was decisive, it was this deciding factor. In other words, she can't find any documentation to say whether it was the deciding factor or not. Many of these applicants had served as officers in the West Indian Regiment and clearly had regarded this as an indication of their acceptability for other posts after the war. Even if there were a problem for posts in Africa, it is difficult to see why their color should have been a problem in the West Indies. Several were already in the government service and were surely entitled to promotions. In what may be considered typical British style, these racial considerations were never revealed to the applicants for posts. They were fobbed off with forms to fill in, assurances that their application had been noted, statements that there were no openings at present, or that the competition for posts was so great that little hope of an appointment should be entertained. Mm. The black and colored applicants were left to guess, as they no doubt did, that they were the wrong color for most posts in colonial service, especially outside the West Indies.
Yes.
Surprisingly, given the levels of concern indicated above, little comments were made about Joseph's color when he applied to go to British Guyana as an acting attorney general in 1921. The colonial office official seemed possibly unaware that he was a dark-skinned colored man. They accepted the recommendation of Governor Probyn, P-R-O-B-Y-N, and Attorney General St. John Branch of Jamaica with little question. Probyn pointed out that while Joseph acted as Attorney General, he had conducted all legal work in the Legislative Council, and in doing so, he had succeeded in making the government policy acceptable to the elected members. Branch wrote, "Mr. Joseph is a sound and capable lawyer and would, I believe, perform the duties of Attorney General for British Guyana ably and well," and this seemed to satisfy the colonial office. There were a number of references in the press, both in Jamaica and Guyana, to the regrets in the former that Joseph was leaving, but at the same time praise for his achievements and congratulations to Guyana on acquiring his services. When he reached British Guyana in 1921, Josephs apparently soon earned the approval of the governor, Sir Wilford Colet, who wrote in April of 1921 that he should be appointed a king's counsel in the colony as he was in Jamaica, saying, "I consider that Mr. Joseph is more than average ability. It seems that whatever reservations they may have been in British Guyana about Joseph's appointment, he was welcomed there politely and quickly became accepted as a valued member of the community. He was soon involved in court cases and the work of the legislative bodies. But apart from his official duties, he took part in activities connected with various organizations, as he had done in Jamaica. His official duties, he took part in activities, He established his legal reputation with the first case he prosecuted, that of Christy Davison, for the murder of Sidney Outram, R-A-M, must be an Indian. Davison was found guilty and hanged, and Joseph's final speech for the prosecution was long remembered. In August of 1921, a columnist in the Daily Gleaner in Guyana recalled the speech and the reputation it had helped to create. And this is what he recalled. "Mr. Hector Joseph, it might surprise you to know how much fame you are achieving in this colony. Primarily, you are hailed as you are the first man of your kind to hold the exalted position you dignify. Next, you are given a very high esteem because your honors sit well on your shoulders. You well become them. They have not caused you to run riot among your fellows as so many of your stamp do, with even a trifle portion of the honor. Fortune has strewn in your path. Then you are given the opportunity. Your speech, which sent Davis to the gallows, I use the term advisedly, A-D-V-I-S-E-D-L-Y, advisedly, will not soon be forgotten. Its pointedness, the beautiful diction you employed, the clarity of argument you exemplified, will ever remain green in the memories of all who heard you that day. Despite the patronizing tone of this passage, it gives a clear idea of the kind of impact Joseph had quickly made, how he looked from another's perspective, appears in a remark recorded in the following year. But you know them got a man in this colony who does give people a lot of trouble. You know he named Hector Joseph. When he charge you, you proper got trouble. He named the king of trouble. Go ask Davison. Joseph is back in the combined court. Can case be gauged perhaps from the farewell speeches?" What I was reading before was what one of the, let's say, the less educated men speaking the Guyanese broken English was writing about Joseph.
Oh, okay.
You know, see what him do to Davis?
Mm-hmm.
When you get him as the prosecuting attorney, you got trouble.
You got trouble.
Because we're all sidebars. Okay, let's go back to the
doggy.
So you want trouble? Go ask Davis. Davison. That's the man they hung. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's read what somebody else had to say about him. R.E. Bassington, speaking on behalf of the elective, said they had been struck by the very capable manner in which the Attorney General had handled all the bills that came before the Court of Policy, especially. He always thought that Mr. Joseph got through with them with the minimum of friction and with the greatest celebrity. He thought that there was hardly an occasion when any member came in conflict with him, Mr. Joseph. So I'm going to take a break now to share some of my thoughts with the listeners about how, as I said, things have changed so much and that so many things remain the same. It's obvious that this man, Hector Joseph, was smart in many ways. You know, in the old days, my older parents used to say, you know, when you have your hand in the lion's mouth, take time and pull it out. Don't yank it out.
Right.
Go and get bitten. So after he got his education, he needed connections.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew he was good as anybody else, you know, as they said, you know, they got the Cargills to be their attorneys. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Because the Cargills were well established. They were a dynasty, according to this documentation.
Right.
And, you know, if you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly.
You got it?
Yes.
If you got the wit and the power and the money, if it's going to the long term is going to benefit a lot of people, then you need to go with the flow and don't pull your hand too quickly out of the lion's mouth.
Exactly.
So I just think all of this, there are so much lessons for us in all of these stories of the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That I am always just so flabbergasted by how well all of this fit into what we can get from it and what we can take from it and what we can pass on to the next generation of doers and movers and shakers. Because, you know, some people are, if you just pardon me, just they're seat warmers. They're just taking up some space on the planet. They're not movers and shakers. And I think my own spiritual belief, you know, that we're all co-creators with the Creator, because everything on this earth that was not part of nature, the trees, the rocks, the water, that everything else is a creation by someone with an idea or a thought that they followed through on. Think about the water, the pipe that it flows through, the tools that dug the earth that put the pipe in, whether it's a robot now or it was a pickaxe then. All of that was something created from the mind, a thought, an idea by a person. Because God gave the person the idea about the pipe and the tool to dig the hole or whatever. But it wasn't on the planet before us.
Right.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So we are all co-creators with the Creator. So we all have something to give and establish and leave. So we're running out of time now, but I really wanted to get that point across, because I really feel so strongly about it. And even though in your corner of the world you might feel that you really don't have that big a deal to do, give, or be, you would be surprised. Because even if as a senior, or even if you're not a senior, if you give support, encouragement, an idea, a pat on the back to someone who goes on to do something that makes a difference, in some way you have contributed.
That's it.
So with that said, I want to ask any listeners on the board that might want to chime in before we ring off to hold up your hand by hitting 1 on your telephone, or thereby hold your peace if you don't. But I want to remind the listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Thursday where this passionate senior celebrates, enlightens, and preserves the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. Miss Jeannie.
Land Jeannie? We love.
Land we love, yes.
Land.
And as we get ready to celebrate the 50th year of independence of Jamaica, I want to just encourage all the friends of Jamaica, the Jamaicans themselves in the diaspora, to really just, you know, reflect on all the wonderful things that we have contributed to the world.
Amen.
So with that said, I want to bid you good night. And as I always ask you to make it a great week. And I hope you come back next week and share with me. So thank you for listening. And remember to tell your friends about the show. Or just if you're listening online or if you come by later to listen, just copy and paste the URL and send it off in your email. And all our shows are archived, so you can search within the site on Blog Talk Radio for anything that we have done in the past that you might even have the one word of. We've done the fruits, the parishes, the people, when the people came. I mean, we've covered lots of stuff. As I mentioned earlier, we had talked about this gentleman, Mr. Hector Joseph, before when I did the earthquake.
Yes, yeah.
So I am getting more and more inspired, and I guess I'll go on for a little while longer. So I really, really appreciate all the support I'm getting from the callers in. I see your numbers on the board, although you are not putting up your hand, but I know that you've hung with me for the entire time, and I want to thank you so much for it. So good night, and make it a great week, and I hope to see you next week.
God bless. Good night.
Good night, dear. And I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.